Hey, what's good, everyone? This is Rich.
And I'm Marcus.
And you're listening to Paychecks and Balances, where personal finance and career advice feels pretty good. And it feels right. That might be too sensual, though. And so we don't get sued. This is for entertainment purposes only.
And you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Pay Balances and on Facebook at Paychecks and Balances. Follow our individual accounts at The Marcus Garrett with one T on Twitter, two T's everywhere else. And Rich is available at I Am Rich Jones.
I am.
Also, don't forget to join our email list by visiting paychecksandbalances.com/email, where you'll receive our weekly newsletter covering actionable work and money tips and much more.
And today's episode is sponsored by LinkedIn Learning. Get a free 30-day trial of their extensive course library by visiting linkedin.com/paychecks, all lowercase.
And today's episode is also sponsored by Health IQ, an insurance company that helps health-conscious people get lower rates on their life insurance. Go to healthiq.com/paychecks to support the show and see if you qualify, especially the senior millennials out there. On a related note, I actually went in for my annual, is it checkup?
Well, no, it's a physical, right?
What is it called when you're being proactive? Whatever that is. Preventative. Yeah, I did the preventative health check. Anyway, folks, you know, I'm still alive. Everything came back normal. Some people who follow me also know there was like a lump that showed up out of nowhere. Ooh. Apparently, it was just an ingrown hair.
That's still scary, though.
Yeah, it was, because it got really big and then it got really small. I won't, you know, go too into the details. But the weird thing was they called me recently to give me, you know, all the updates and everything. Everything was normal. But then they said you can come back in a year or 5 years.
5 years seems like a long time to go without anything.
Yeah.
That's a long time for stuff to go wrong.
Seemed like a really long range. They're like, come back next year or 5 years. Like, all right. Thank you. So anyway, I don't know what's going on with the healthcare system. Perhaps somebody can come on and talk to us about that.
Yeah. We'll definitely have to get that in the queue. And so January, I know that was a month where people talked about all the resolutions, things to position yourself for 2018, blah, blah, blah. We haven't done that type of episode yet, even though we did close out 2017 with some things to keep in mind. But we figured it'd be good to talk about some of the things that we're focused on and thinking about for 2018, and maybe even a little bit about how we're going to go about making some of those things happen. So I don't call these resolutions per se. What about you? I kind of just see these as like action items, goals, things I'm doing.
Yeah, I don't really like resolutions because, one, people don't tend to stick to them, including present companies. So I just say, yeah, goals are things I need to accomplish for the year. And I feel like resolutions tend to get tied around the new year. Thus, you're like, well, if I don't start it in the new year, I might as well just wait till 2019. I'm like, nah, bro, that's not how any of this works.
Yeah, there's definitely some people who are like, well, I didn't start it in January, so I've already lost a month, so I might as well not start it at all. It is okay to get started at any point in time, whether it's March, April. Hell, if you want to get started in November and you want to try to finish it out by the end of the year, great. If you want to get started in November, no one is going to carry till the next year. That's awesome as well. The most important thing to do is make sure that you get going. And so before we jump into these, we should note that we've been working for over a decade. We've been working for over 10 years, bro. Over 10 years now.
Bro, I'm going to talk about that in my list. Yo. But anyway, yeah, a little foreshadowing.
And so along the way, we've made some really poor decisions, but we've also made some solid career decisions that have set us up to have some flexibility that we didn't have earlier in our younger and probably not so bright days. And so even if some of this isn't applicable today, it'll be applicable eventually. And the reason I mention this, I've seen like some of the comments like, oh, that seems so advanced, or like, wow, I wish I could do that. I'm not quite there yet. And that is fine. That is totally fine. So I just want to make sure people have that context, especially some of the things that I'm thinking about this year. It's after being at the day gig or various day gigs, dealing with all of the things for over a decade. And after all of this struggle and strife, maybe you feel the same. We've got a little bit more that we can do that we couldn't do before, which is kind of nice. And there's also some fundamental things that I know we're both going to talk about.
I also noticed just on the ego point that I now describe it as just a decade. It's actually longer than a decade. I'm going to talk a little bit about that, but I'm just going to describe it in decades. So if anyone asks me how much experience I have, I'm just going to say over a decade until it's two decades. I don't care if it's 11 years or 19 years. It's just going to be a decade of experience.
I like that. It actually makes me feel like I still have some youth left, which people keep telling me I'm young, and I don't know. I don't quite feel that way, but I guess it's relative if you're like 60.
For me, I don't realize, and I mean, I haven't done everything, but I don't realize what I've accomplished until I put together like a speaker biography or someone's introducing me. I'm like, man, Like, who are you describing right now? That almost sounds like somebody I should listen to. And I'm like, and they're like, and we bring it to the stage. I'm like, wait, they're talking about me. So the resume, I've now got the infamous 2-page resume. So, you know, yeah, that's what you get with a decade of experience, I guess.
And I see absolutely nothing wrong with that. But kicking it off, the first thing I had on my list is to open additional bank accounts. In particular, I'm looking at opening a side hustle account this year. And so I know we have a bank account for the podcast, you know, that we both contribute to. But I realized I need a separate fund for some of the other entrepreneurial things that I'm doing beyond the podcast. I don't know if I mentioned it on the show, but I started a website that teaches people how to start and grow a podcast at theshowstarter.com. And I realized between that, this, and the day job, it's impossible for me to do everything. And I realized that the only way that I'm going to be able to get that project to where I want it to go without being able to say I'm going to focus solely on that 100% is to outsource as many tasks as possible that don't involve me creating content or just being creative generally. So stuff like creating social media pamphlets, and people don't pass out pamphlets on social media. That made no sense. Creating social media graphics, creating web pages and getting into the code. Like, I just don't have the time to do that stuff anymore. So I'm like, yo, I need to continuously put away money on the side to be able to make that happen. Comment there?
Yeah, I actually got a shout out, Popcorn Finance, for two reasons. I was on episode 37, which if you read the show notes from last week, you saw where we were talking about getting on a budget and when you're having trouble sticking to a budget, what you can do to overcome that. And shout out to Chris, because I don't know if he does it himself, but his social media game is on point. So like, he's got call out card. He's got voice card. He does like I sent him a picture of myself and it came back better than I look. I was like, who's this guy? So shout out to Chris. Check out the show Popcorn Finance. But yeah, anything you can do. And I agree with you. We've talked about that before. I think it's our nature more than some people. But we definitely try to take too much on. And I think it's actually both of our weakness is we try to do everything ourselves and thus nothing gets done. So definitely identifying those opportunities. But one of the questions I was going to ask you is, are you doing that for tax purposes currently or maybe tax purposes in the future? Or are you just splitting out the accounts?
I didn't even think about the tax side of it. To me, it's just like, I need to make this happen and I don't have the funds this month, or I'm going to start this budget, or I'm going to start this savings account 3 months from now. I just need to start it as soon as possible so that when things come up, I don't have to think about it. I can just say, there's money there for that. I'm going to pull from this account, pay for it, and be done with it.
Okay.
Also, I do want to say that we have gotten, like, I think we said on a previous episode, we got like 93% of things done. I mean, maybe it's maybe that was a little generous. Maybe it's like 82.
Well, let me be clear. We get things done and we get the high priority things done. But what noticed, I was joking with a friend about this. What we do is we start 100 things and get 8 high priority things done. I think what we're talking about, we've talked about this offline, is identifying the 2 to 3 high priority things. So we start 10 things. We're trying to get LeBron numbers, you know what I'm saying? Like high percentage shots. We're trying to be in our 35th year, I might add. So along the same lines, watching LeBron get old is more depressing than watching myself get old. Same thing with like Larry Fitzgerald, where they're like, it's more reflective. I'm like, because I, you know, he's when he came in the league, you know, we all have like the player or someone relate to as far as, I wouldn't say lifestyle, but we identify with because their journey aligns with our journey. We might just be the same age. And a shocking fact that my dad shared with me and Lil Wayne, for example, are the same age. I didn't even know that. He was like, did you? And I don't even know why he knew that. I don't know. He was trying to relate some story to me and my nephew. So obviously we have like a decade in between us or 15 years. And he was like, yeah, you should know that your uncle's Lil Wayne age. And I didn't believe him. I had to like Google it. And it is also true. Lil Wayne's like 2 months older than me. And that is a surreal experience to go through, that the Carter, Mr. Carter, you know, is 2 months older than you. And so anyway, when I watch LeBron and people are like, yeah, you know, he's in his final years, I'm like, wait a minute, he's younger than me. And so it makes it more, it brings it home, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
You know what? It gives me hope, too, because he's still on top of his game and he's still the best in the world, even though he's starting to get up there.
Yeah, I don't think I nailed that analogy, but that's what I was trying to get with. Like, his shooting percentage is improved as far as shots taken. So we've always taken good shots, but now we're going to take less shots and we're going to take smart shots. And I think that's what we're setting ourselves up for in 2018.
Basically more aggressive driving layups and dunks and jumpers here and there that we know are going to go in.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Got to keep those knees. We got to get on the Tim Duncan system, you know, if we want to stay around to our 40s in this lifestyle that we've become accustomed to.
And the other thing I was going to mention along these lines is just further segmenting out my bank account. So I have one, it's pretty much my monthly operating expenses plus discretionary. Then I have another one that's like discretionary, but I also sometimes will do bigger ticket items out of that account. And I'm like, yo, I want to set up 1 to 2 more accounts, really segment this out. And if I do have to set up an automatic transfer on my side because I've exhausted the number of direct deposit accounts, that's fine. But I just want more clarity about which account is for what, because sometimes I'll be in a store, I'll be somewhere, and I'm like hesitating about which card to pull out. So I'm not sure if there's one card that you use for everything, but I'll be like, ah, do I want to use this card? I'm like, this is kind of discretionary, but this is also going to benefit the home. Which one should I use? And I just want to make that decision process even easier.
Yeah, I have one card that I use at any given time. So I actually looked the other day. I have like 16.
You say 16 cards?
Yeah. Like, I mean, I opened my first card when I was 18. Mind you, I opened 3 cards shortly thereafter that. So I also don't close cards.
Smart.
Because I use the credit utilization benefits me to have all those cards available. I cut them up. And if I ever, I've talked to people about this before. People are scared to cut up credit cards. I have never had an issue if I told a credit card I want it tomorrow, they would probably hand run it down for me from Massachusetts or wherever they incorporate it. Like, don't worry about getting it. They'll get it to you. They'll send you the number. Like, so this issue that, oh, I don't want to cut up. What if I need it? Like, what if an emergency arises? There is no emergency where people will not extend you credit. Trust me, they want your business. With that being said, whenever I stop using a card, I cut it up and use the card that is most applicable to what I want to accomplish at that time, which is one thing I want to talk about. It's not really a goal, but it does relate to this. So for example, I'll go ahead and name drop. I've had a Chase card for like 15 years. Huh. It's a great card. It's done everything. Unfortunately, I can't plug it, which they're not paying me, so it doesn't really matter. I actually don't know the exact name of the card, but it's great. It has a low interest rate. I'll go ahead and say what it is. It's been 10%, and it used to be 9%. It's been 10% forever. At one point, it was 0%. Because I've been with that card, and I can't even tell you how long, every now and then they'll drop it down to like 5.9% for the next 6 months. There's all kinds of great deals.
Trying to get you.
Yeah, I rent through it, our rental car. And so it's not a goal, but I would like to get to a point, and I can't recall the name, but the author is I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which is one of the books on my reading list. So maybe I'll read this exact topic.
Ramit Sethi?
Yes.
Yeah.
He talks about using a credit card to pay all your bills. So as I've talked about, I pay all my bills on the second, but I use a debit card. And he says one of the benefits of using a credit card to do that is all the points you can accumulate, as well as improving your credit score. It's really gaming the system, but using a credit card responsibly. So I'm not quite there yet. And there's also some fees associated with. So like if I paid my rent with the credit card, there would be an additional fee that I'm not sure is worth it yet. I think it's like $25. I hate those quote unquote convenience fees for you're charging me more money for the convenience of spending my own money. Like, that doesn't make sense.
Oh, you mean the fee that the rental or leasing company charges because you're using,
right?
Yeah. I hate it.
They take a direct debit. I use an electronic check, which is free, but they charge a fee if I use a credit card. And obviously home is my biggest expense. So if I was to move to this lifestyle, I'm going to try to figure out how to overcome that. One other thing that you mentioned, you reminded me, and I did do this year so I've used Mint forever. I don't know if you're better about this. And I more or less use Mint because honestly, I like the little pie chart. I just like to know where things are going. I look at the pie chart and I make sure that it aligns with my budget. Right now, I'm on an 80-20 budget, as I've talked about before. I've used a 50-30-20 before as well. If you want to use or determine which budget you have, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/tools. We have that there sponsored by NerdWallet. But what I was going to say is I was like, you know what? Let me try actually developing the budget side of Mint. So I went into Mint and it's time consuming. And I went through each category and I aligned with what I want to do for the budget. So for those who have Mint, and I like Mint, it automatically assigns budget. And I assume it like does some algorithm and it looks at like your spending history, and it already automatically does a budget, but I never set it up for, I want to spend this amount of money on groceries. Mm. So I'm going to see how that works. It's my first month. I put it in there for January. Groceries are still in the green. And so I'm going to see, I think the main complaint about Mint and budgets in general is it's a weird complaint, but I understand it. Is people are like, well, it doesn't tell me what to do. And I'm like, that's not what it's designed for. That's like getting upset because Siri doesn't also drive your car. Like, it gives you the map. It tells you how to get there. It's the plan. yes, you still have to do a little bit of work. You have to follow the plan. If Siri says take a left, you turn right. Guess whose fault that is?
Yeah.
And so that's why I'm going to see if this will help me make Mint more useful to my, and I usually check in about once a month, to my monthly budgeting system. So to be continued.
I have not done that, but that's also something that's down my list. And so it's funny for me because my groceries, it's always in the green, but then that dining out category, red.
Yeah, you don't want to know where my pie chart is on. It's in a big category too. It's like bars and entertainment. Like entertainment's like this huge list. And so it looks horrible. It's always, now to be fair, it's smaller than rent. And what's my next largest? I think transportation, because my car note's in there. But it's still big and it jumps out. I open it and you know how the graph adjusts.
Yeah, yeah.
Entertainment's like entertainment. I'm like, oh wait, I don't feel like I went out that much. But then you go down there and drill, and I'm like, okay, yes I did.
Yeah, that's probably why I haven't looked in there in a little while. Like, I'm not going to front. I probably haven't looked in Mint in a few months now. I'm going to change that, though, man. Maybe in February, maybe in March. But I'm just being real. I'm just being real about
it. Well, I like Mint. It's easy to use. It's easy to track. Honestly, to your point, I even have not been using the tool. And I complained one day, and I tried not to be a hypocrite. I complained. I'm like, well, the budget doesn't really help to me. And I'm like, well, Marcus, you never really set it up. So now I'm going to set it up and see if it's more helpful and making me either change or being more conscious of how I spend my money.
Yeah, I've been managing by balance on a couple of
accounts. Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Where I'm like, all right, oh, so it's this time of the month, I should probably have this amount of money in there. If I don't, I may go investigate further. And the other thing that's really helped me with staying on track, and I've talked about it before or plenty of times, is Digit. So every day I get like a, your balance is now, and I can reply with one word and it'll tell me the last few things that I purchased. So that's been super helpful. But it would be good for me to go through that bigger exercise, just given how many things have changed over the past few months, and kind of just like reshuffle and make sure that I'm actually saving the amount of money that I should be saving, which I should be fine because of the automatic transfers and stuff that I have set up. But, you know, I could be doing more possibly, and I'm just not looking at it enough.
And that's actually a really good point. I think, as it relates to this conversation, I hope folks don't feel like we're jumping around. I think these are all related. But that's the thing. You can always be doing more. Technically, all my bills are paid on the second. I think the only bill I don't pay by the second in most cases is my cell phone bill. And that's only because it comes in like the 15th. So I could prepay it, but I usually just wait to see what the exact amount is. And I say that because technically I could stop there. Like, all the bills are paid. So everything that is, like you said, left in the checking account is mine to do whatever I want with. That's why I like the simplicity of an 80-20 budget. Just pay all the bills, put 20% towards whatever my retirement accounts are, and move on. Like, everything that is left is me. I can go out, burn it in a pile. It doesn't hurt anything because all the bills are covered. And that includes food. So what I'm trying to do here is make sure within that 80% that those different categories are being funded correctly. So am I overspending on groceries? And I just don't know it because I'm not tracking groceries month to month. Am I overspending on gas is a good example, because like you, I fill up because I need to. It's not like I'm consciously thinking how much I'm spending on gas. But now I have a budget allocation for gas. So like if I drive all around or gas goes up, or maybe I don't even notice that, you know, I made a few trips. I usually go down and see family, that maybe gas actually ate up $200 or $300 that month instead of, well, actually, I don't want to say how much I spent on gas because it'll probably hurt people's feelings since I'm in Texas. I saw it yesterday on Snapchat that some gas in California is like $4.
Yeah. So I got gas the other day and it was like $3.72 and I was tight. Definitely had to clench fist with one hand, clenching the gas pump with the other, man.
I don't know where this person was, but it was like $4.59. I'm like, are they in Hawaii? Like, what is going on? It was like under $2 here.
But
anyway, yeah, cost of living adjustments.
Yeah. And so I'd say a service like Mint, it's good to help you stop guessing. And even with your bank accounts and credit cards, some of those even offer these features where it can create a budget or it can just break down your spending. Well, maybe not create a budget, but it'll tell you by category how much you've spent. Versus just kind of like the guessing, like, I think I bought this, I think I did this. Because most people don't want to take the time and sit and look through their statement, but they will look at like an overall number and go, okay. Or at least that's what works for me. Like, I'm not going to sit and read through each individual line item, but I will look at like a higher number category to figure out like how I'm doing on that particular thing.
Yeah, for me, I just want, I'm at a point where as long as everything's going down, I'm not really concerned. We were on another show when I was, actually it was the last show, where I was complaining about my insurance going up $5, which I still haven't solved, and I'm not going to go on a soapbox about now, but that's what I'm talking about. It only jumped out because it went up. Everything is supposed to be going down.
Yeah.
That's why I'm putting off buying the iPhone. I have a phone where the battery dies every 15 minutes. It barely stays on, but I'm just too stubborn to buy a phone.
Yeah, we're not even going to talk about that thing that they do with the batteries, because that'll be a whole nother rabbit hole. But you were right. You were right in that it's been a scheme for all these years, and I look forward to whatever class action $2.22 you get, or that discount on replacing the battery, or whatever it is that they're doing.
Our spinoff show is going to be me just going over conspiracies until I'm proven right, and then I'll side out those episodes. But yes.
And so you mentioned the Chase card, which ties to another thing that I'm looking to do. And we'll probably be doing this in the next week, I would say today, but I'm not. And so that's switching a credit card to a new type that aligns with my lifestyle. So I too have a Chase card. I have a Chase Slate card, which is great for balance transfers, but I've found that it's not great for much else. There's no rewards points. There's no book travel through this card and you're going to get some type of benefit. There's nothing like that. But then Chase has other cards that are pretty popular, and I'm not saying people need to get these cards, but the Chase Freedom, I know a lot of people who rock with that. The Chase Sapphire is another one. And both of these are great for points. And these are the cards when I go out with people and I'm pulling out my debit card, they're usually pulling out like one of these two cards. And I'm like, all right, I'm finally responsible enough to pay my balance in full monthly, you know. So I'm going to see if I can do a product switch without them doing a hard credit check. And even if they do a credit check, I'm not too pressed about that, just because my credit's been in good shape for some time now. And I imagine if I got a limit increase or a greater limit with a new card, the benefit in terms of what that'll do for my utilization will outweigh the temporary impact of having a hard credit check. But I did this with another card, man, where I had a Citi card, and I forget what the previous version of it. I think it was like Citi Diamond Preferred or something like that. And I just called them and was like, I want to go to this other card. And they just, you know, I heard some clicking and then I heard some crappy music and they came back and they're like, okay, which card do you want to move to? And they let me move to the card that I'm on now, which I think is like one of the Citi thank you cards. And they were able to do that without running a credit check, just based off of my history with them. I've been paying the bill off on a timely schedule. So they didn't need to do anything extra. And so I'm going to see if Chase will allow me to do the same thing where it's like, look, I've had this card for a while. You notice I'm not using it. It doesn't give me anything. Can I switch products so that I can actually use this card and take advantage of the points and see if they go for that without doing the credit check? And so, yeah, I'll update with however that goes, but that's like one of my top of the list things. I'm just like, man, I could be getting these points. You know, I could be getting flights with as much as I use my card, getting gas and stuff like that. And I was so worried about the idea of carrying a balance and the interest rate. And it's like, yo, just pay it off in full, which fortunately I'll be in a position to do. But the thing is, it doesn't even feel like so much being in a position to do it, because I'm already doing that anyway with these bills and with these expenses. I'm just usually paying it directly out of my account. So the biggest thing is not falling into that habit of saying, you know what, I'll take care of it. And then the due date passes, or it's like, you know what, it's okay if I carry a little balance, which I've done in the past. It's saying, yo, I need to pay this amount off. I know it looks great that the money is still in my checking account, because that's the nice part of it, that for some people when they have a credit card, they sometimes forget, and it's nice but not good. They're like, oh, my bank account looks higher, but that's because you've been using your credit card and you need to pay that balance off, bruh, sis, or ma'am. So that's one thing that I'm looking into, man. I'm looking to make one of those switches so I can start capitalizing on these rewards.
Yeah, I'm very supportive of that. And I don't have much more to add other than I've had good customer service experience pretty unanimously with Citi. So for customer service, and that's not to say I've had a bad experience with Chase. The only reason I'm with Chase is I used to be with, they closed, Washington Mutual? Whoever Chase bought out. That's why I'm with Chase. So it hasn't been a bad experience, but it wasn't like the bank that I started with.
Got it.
And so any experience that I've had with Citi to date has been positive. And they did the same thing for me. I don't remember which card it was, but they reached out to me with like, hey, we have a better card. We think it aligns with your lifestyle. It's lower. I think they even introduced it at 0% interest rate. And that's something else to keep in mind. And we talked about that with Michael Hobbs on why millennials are facing the greatest financial struggle since the Great Depression. And that was, you know, it's a competitive market right now. And I feel like the market, as far as credit cards go, used responsibly, does favor us, the consumer. So a lot of these, like I saw a card, like I think I even have a card that I wasn't even using. I didn't even realize this. They had like 21 months, no interest. So obviously I started using it because I'm like, oh, I didn't even know this exists. So I think especially for these new cars. And that's how I got to such high accounts, because there's been times where I've been approached by a car and it's just not a good deal. I tear it up and move on. Actually, that happens all the time. That happens more often than not. How I got that many accounts was, if I get an offer that's better than any cars that I have available, I'll use it. And usually what happens is Chase is pretty long term. So I've used them the longest, but every now and then I'll get like a 0% interest card or some high points rewards or travel or something like that. I use it until the 0% stops working, and then I cut it up and I go back to the baby. You know, it's like LeBron. I'm just going down to Miami, have a little fun, and I'll come back home. You know, I'm coming home. Put that article out there.
Yeah, I was going to make some other LeBron reference. It was related to the hairline, but I'm going to spare that one. Everybody's got strengths and weaknesses and choices. One of my biggest strengths, I'm an idea machine. I churn them out. Factory. One of my biggest weaknesses, project management. Trackers and nitty-gritty details cause me chest pain. They also stop me from getting started. But fortunately, LinkedIn Learning has a number of courses covering the many facets of project management. Skills I need to keep me on the up and up at the day gig and in the side hustle. And if there are courses for me, I know there are courses for you. When you log in, they'll be recommended for you automatically just to make your life easier. And you can learn from anywhere and at your own pace. For a free 30-day trial of LinkedIn Learning, visit linkedin.com/paychecks. Again, that's linkedin.com/paychecks, all lowercase. Today's episode is also sponsored by HealthIQ. HealthIQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people. So if you're someone that hits the gym, pounds the pavement, or regularly exercises in some clean-minded way, you could be saving money on life insurance the same way people save money on car insurance by being a good driver. HealthIQ can save customers up to 33% because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes, aka the sugar, compared to people who are inactive. This means you have the chance to be rewarded for things that keep you on Earth longer. How is that not a win? How, Sway? To see if you qualify for the most exclusive rate, get your free quote today at healthiq.com/paychecks. Again, that's healthiq.com/paychecks. And now back to the show. So let's go with one from your list, man.
So for me, and I've talked about this before, I think it's more along the personality side, and it still is. I think it was a carry forward from 2017, but for me, it's to enjoy the journey. So you talked about this, and I don't know when you started, but I've been working since I was 16. My first job was 16, working at a movie theater. Best job I've ever had, I might add. Lowest paying job. Lowest paying job, but also the best job, which money doesn't buy happiness. And so I've been working 19 years. I've spent more years, and I was doing this for the show, I've spent more years working than I have not been working. So I went 16 years without working, and now I've been working 19 years. That's the only life that I've known.
That actually makes me really sad.
Yes. Yeah. So a lot of that was, well, not a lot of that, about half of that was part-time. But like most people, for some reason, I was in a rush to graduate college early. So I graduated college at 22. And so I started my full-time job at 22. And I'm trying to do the math there. What is that? 12 years? 13. So that's 13 years of full-time work. And as you and I have talked about, I've gotten better about it, but I don't take a lot of vacation. So that's basically 13 years of full-time work where I definitely didn't max out my vacation for a long time. I just let it sit there. Like, you have this weird pride that I never use PTO. I never take time off. And then you're just exhausted. There's no reward for it. And Financial Samurai warned us about this, and I'll drop that episode in the show notes for those of you who missed it. I'm tired of work. And I want to clarify that I'm tired of work. I'm not tired of working. But to me, work and job are not equivalent. So I'm not actually tired of my job. There's still things that I find exciting and interesting about my job. And that's why I continue to do it. That's why I do have a 9-to-5 and we do this podcast. However, fundamentally, and I struggle with, is this me? Is it the millennial in me? Am I going through a midlife crisis? Am I going through an accelerated midlife crisis? And that I just can't wrap my head around. It was even worse in Denver. I remember there would be times, usually in the winter, because I walked to the train stop every day. And sometimes when that snow was coming down and I'm sloshing through, you know, 2 feet of snow, I'm like, I'm just going to walk home. And I meant to Texas.
Oh,
I'm like, I'm done. Like, why would anybody do this to themselves? Now, mind you, I haven't had any coffee yet. My stomach's probably, I'm probably going through some hangry emotions, but it's just like, why would anyone do this for 40 years? You ever had this discussion? Like, the problem is I've got too long to walk. So, you know, snow in the movies is all serenic and, you know, it's all the noises are muted, and it is. But that's also a very scary place to be for folks who have walked through a blizzard. And you're like, why would anybody do this to themselves? Like, you start going through this existential crisis. Like, I got to do this for 40 more years. I start doing the math. I'm like, 45. And I'm like, yo, when can I leave? So, and that has nothing to do with the job. It's just 40 hours times 40 years would wear down, I would say, the most resilient person.
Yeah.
And I'm not even sure I'm the most resilient. I've been doing that since age 16. So I am just, I don't know if I need a break. I'm just tired. And I just try to clarify that there is no job where I wouldn't be tired of that. That's just, I guess, like a backbreaking exercise, as they say.
Yeah.
And so I do feel a lot of the past years was just head down, paying off debt, going to work, repeating the cycle. And I realized most of the advice I've been following is based on the plan of retiring between the ages of 63 or 67 or longer. Because to be fair, we are living longer. But if I want to reach what I more or less call financial independence, I'm not really worried about retirement because I wouldn't know what I would do. I feel that that's the catch 22. If I was retired, and we've talked about this, I could retire uncomfortably and you can retire comfortably. If I were to retire, I'd be bored. So it's not that I'm done working and doing things that continue to engage me and I find excitement and experiencing new things. I'm just trying to do it. And I guess the cliche is work-life balance. And I'm trying to wrap my head around what that balance looks like for me. But this is not it. I still haven't mastered it yet because I still do. In fact, right now, I do 40 hours at the day job. Then we come and do, what, 10, 20 hours for the podcast, not to mention any writing or things I may do on the side. So it's engaging. It's exciting. But there's just so many hours in the day and there's only so many years. And I wouldn't say my life. That sounds really morbid. But there's so many years where
it's true, though. It is finite.
Yeah. I don't want to continue to run on this hamster wheel / rat race. Yeah. I want to do something different. And for me, I think that's going to mean accelerating my plans, my financial plans. And that's why I think this is a very relevant conversation. So that's mine for 2018.
You know, I was talking to my therapist earlier, and normally I go in and talk about other stuff, but for whatever reason today. And so even though today is a day I didn't go to work, I still went in, was thinking about work, and I'm talking and I'm just like, yo, as good as the opportunity is, and as much as people say there are people that would kill to be in your place, so you should be thankful, it still takes a lot out of me. And I was thinking about even how work affects my ability to do things outside of work. And I don't just mean side hustle stuff, but like with the way my job works, I'm an introvert in an extroverted job. I'm managing a team of people with, which has various challenges in itself. The work itself is fine. Where I work is fine, but I come home and I am just on E. And there was a stretch where I would get home and that first hour after work was like my last gasp of creativity. So I would come home and immediately do whatever type of side hustle or creative thing I wanted to do for an hour, and then I would quickly fade to black after that. And over the past few weeks, even before the holidays, I was getting home and I was just completely spent. And so I was talking to the therapist about it, and I'm like, does this mean I hate life? Does this mean I hate my job? Am I in the right career? And what came from the conversation is that it wasn't so much about my career as the particular things that I'm doing at work. So I realized that I do a lot more at my job that takes from me versus energizes me. And so you said that there are things you still do at work that, like, you know, you enjoy and maybe you're energized by. And I still do a lot where it feels like I'm just giving so much of myself and I'm not using some of the creative muscles that I'd like to use more. So I tend to be like more of a visionary, strategic thinker type of person. And I spend a lot of time caught up in the transactional, asking questions, responding to inquiries, routing stuff so it gets done. And so now part of what I'm working on is figuring out what I can do to remove some of the hurdles and barriers and what I can do to find more times to do the parts of my job that, like, actually energize me and make me feel good. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because that's like, it wasn't even something that I thought about as a goal before today, but I walked out of that session like, yo, I know I have a whole lot of responsibility. I have a team of people that I can utilize, delegate stuff to. And it's like, how do I push more of that stuff that just takes my life forces to these other people, empower them to get their stuff done and grow in the process? and at the same time give me the energy or the space to utilize the energy to do the things that bring me more excitement and more enjoyment and more fulfillment out of work.
Yeah, I really like that. And we can probably talk about another show, but kudos to you for the therapist drop, the mental health. And
so important, man.
Yeah, we'll definitely talk about that on another show in more detail. But I think that is good to also share and bring up to the listeners. Another thing along those lines that I've realized, and I think you can relate to as well, especially definitely people in mid-career, is so now I have a work-provided phone, for which I am grateful.
That is nice.
But I'm never off work. I'm never off work. If I walk out the office, they're emailing me, like, even now, it being the weekend and on the times when we record the show anyway, I don't know another way to describe it. I'm never off work. They are free to call. And you think it's this benefit, like, oh, man, I got a work phone. I'm coming up in the world. You know, look at me, corner office, like, although I'm in the middle office. And it's a, I don't know how to describe it, but I don't want to call it a curse, but even that 40 hours that I talked about is technically not 40 hours because I guess I'm always literally on call.
Yeah.
So if something comes up at 12 a.m. or something comes up at 6 a.m., even if I'm not physically sitting in the office, they could reach out to me. And they don't as much now. My role has changed a little bit, but they could. And that's another reality. And we've talked about this. One of the hardest things that we've dealt with, and it's not limited to my current workforce, but in several workforces that I've been in, is I have literally had people, and I don't know if this is a millennial thing or just a younger individual thing, who have said to me, I don't want to do your job. You run to too many meetings. You work too hard. Like, and I know you make more money than me, but what you do is not worth it.
That's what I said about my old boss on the show. I've said this very thing before. Now I'm that person.
Yeah. And they say it sometimes. It depends on the person. They say it a little bit nicer than that. But basically, I'm like, hey, man, you're doing great here. Man or woman, you're doing great here. I think you'd be good for a promotional opportunity. I'll keep an eye out. And they're like, nah, I'm good. I'm like, what? You don't want to move up the organizational ladder? And they're like, nah, I'm not really interested in the ladder. I just want to come here, collect my paycheck, do what's expected of me, and do it at a high regard. Don't get me wrong. And then I want to go home. I want to go to the lake. I want to hop on a jet ski. Like, I don't want to be here at 39.9. I had somebody say this to me. At 39.9 hours, I want to be walking towards the elevator.
I respect it.
Yeah, exactly. I got to respect it. I'm like, first of all, I appreciate you saying that. And you're like, I don't want a phone. I don't want you contacting me after work hours. And I'm like, and it's funny because I never even looked at it that way. I'm like, well, that's what everyone does. You get caught up in that. That's what you do. You work your way up and then you work 40 hours and 50 hours and 60 hours. That you're being fortunate to be promoted into working more hours. Who wouldn't want that lifestyle? And then I say it out loud. I'm like, that's insane. Who would want to do that to themselves? And not only do that to themselves, check into it.
Yeah.
Like, I volunteered to do this. I applied for the job. I promoted into more work. And then I also wanted to say, I'll get this in the show notes, but for people who wonder what goes into their credit score, somewhat related, sorry to flash back here. It took me a second to pull this up. 30% is how much you owe, because I realize some people might not know what credit utilization is. So it's the amount of credit you have available across all your cards and how much you're using. So that's why I keep all those cards open. So all those cards that are out there with like a $5,000 limit or a $10,000 limit that I'm not using go towards my credit score, and in this case, my credit utilization, which is really low, and they recommend that you keep under 30% before it starts to impact your credit score. Length of credit history is 15%. Credit mix is 10%. And so credit mix is credit cards, loans, mortgage. It's basically the type of credit that you have open. New credit, which Rich talked about, when you get that hard credit check, which is not universal, as you discussed, but usually when you're looking for either a loan, they're going to do a hard credit check to look at exactly what we're talking about here, which is your credit score and how you basically your credit history is the history of how you manage credit. It's actually not that complicated. And the longer period of time in which they can observe how you've done that, which is this last category, 35% is your payment history. So I've talked about this before, even when I was $30,000 in debt and probably making $20,000 a year, I had a great credit score. I've actually never had I maybe had a lot of credit, but I've honestly never had a bad credit score, like in the 500s or something like that. And I'm not saying that as accomplishment. And if anything, it's terrifying that I was that irresponsible with debt and yet had a high credit score. So that tells you how the game works, because I had been using credit and making timely payments. So basically, I was the perfect customer. I was irresponsible with credit, yet I made timely payments. Like, I am the customer they look for. Like, in the boardroom, they're like, who do we want to target?
Marcus.
We want somebody who will never pay off their debt. Like, if they, like, yeah, they had sketched up an image, he'd be like, all right, he's probably 5'10 and 5'11 in Tim's. And, you know, he looks like this. And Marcus Garrett, like, him, find that customer. Like, I was their dream, their fantasy. I used it irresponsibly, and I never paid it off. I was just proud to make the monthly payment. I was just happy to do that. And so you don't want to be the credit card company's dream. You want to use the credit card for your favorite. And you can. And now I have now learned how to use credit cards responsibly. So I think some people, rightfully or wrongfully, have this fear of credit cards. Like, the credit card is not going to run out and spend itself up.
Yeah, you got to do it.
Maybe on the black web, but that's actually one of the protections that they have for you. So I'll put it this way. If you want to build your credit history and you have none, or you're just terrified of credit cards, this came up another recommendation. So it's not my own, but it's a great one. It's just whatever bill you're already paying, automate it. Netflix is a good example. Put it on the credit card, cut up the credit card, never look at it again. Automate the payment, and you will be building credit history for something you are already doing anyway.
There it is.
And that's just a simple, easy way to do it, and that will benefit you. So people are like, wow, I don't need credit history. I live perfectly fine within my budget. But most of us, and it's up for debate now, will eventually buy a home. It's insane to me what they use credit history reports now. It's insurance, car insurance, cell phone. So pretty much almost everyone is looking at your credit report now. Mm-hmm. So it's not, well, I don't need a credit card. It's actually, unfortunately, not that simple, because it goes into so many other factors, and those will be costly factors when you're paying $200,000, $300,000, $400,000, or if you're on HGTV, $800,000 at your starting budget for a home. And I'll get that in the show notes for you.
And so I also encourage people to go back and listen to PB56, The Truth About Credit, featuring Liz Weston. That was a super informative episode. Like, I learned things about credit scores and how many scores. Like, I didn't even know half of that stuff. So if that's something you're thinking about this year, you're trying to lay the foundation as far as getting a credit card, using credit, go back and listen to PB56. And, you know, one other thing I'll say on the work front that I thought was kind of funny when I was at the therapist and I was all stressed out. And it ties to what you said about the person who's like at 39.9 hours, they're walking toward the door. That person knows balance, which is really, or at least they're more inclined to have balance in their life, or there's a higher chance that they'll be inclined to have balance in their life, because they're like, you know what? I like the lifestyle I have now. I like the free time that I have now. I like the energy that I have when I leave, or I like that I don't have as much drained as you do, sir, who's in all those meetings. So I'm going to keep things going this way. But that balance piece is funny, because I was talking about how it feels like I'm always on. And we were getting toward the end of the session, and I had picked up my phone and I saw that I had an email from work, and it was asking for something today on a day that I have off. I actually, you know what? It's like Martin Luther King Day when we're recording this episode. And I got an email asking me for something. And then I got like a follow up a couple hours later, like, hey, are you there? And I'm like, yo, we have the day off, man. Are you serious?
And yeah, there are no days off.
Yeah, yeah. And so the therapist was like, this is a perfect opportunity for you to set a boundary at work. And so, yes, you could respond. You could get back to them and let them know that it's okay to ask you for things on your day off. Or you could just wait till tomorrow. What happens if you wait 12 more hours before you reply to this person? What happens if you reply to them and say, hey, got the request. I'm off today. I'll send this tomorrow. And I was like, you know, maybe the person thinks that I'm slow, that I'm not as dedicated. And then she's like, yo, it's your day off. And I started getting stressed out. And then I'm in there all emotional, like, you see what this job is doing to me? Like,
yeah, man. Yeah, I definitely get it, man. And I want to be clear that that person who told me that was a high performing worker. So I don't want it to be like, because some people could be, yeah, oh, they're lazy, or you know, they want to leave. They have the audacity to leave on time. Ah! It's like that person had it more together than a lot of individuals who are like, I'll put it this way, and I'm not going to put anyone's name out there, but I've literally had people in my office on multiple occasions, and I've been in people's offices where they're like, yeah, I had to go to the doctor. That preventative care that I talked about, they're like, yeah, I had to. They're on the active care because they're like, oh, I got an ulcer from this job, and I'm stressed out. My doctor says I got to take it easy, and maybe I should work 40 hours. I should do the 39.9-hour system. And I'm like, yo, this is insane that work should not be doing that to you, anyone, us. Like, there is far more important things out there than work. And that's not to say that work is not important, but it is not the only important thing. And I'm not even sure, especially at this point, it is the top important thing. Yeah. I said that to my boss once. There, he was my former boss. I thought his eyes were going to fall out of his head. Like, he was talking about something, and I think it was like at the 39.9 hour, and then I must have already had this conversation. I was like, "Well, I'm going to wrap up." Like, it was clear that he was going to keep going for another long period of time. I'm like, "Well, I'm going to wrap up," and he's like, "Wrap up?" I'm like, "Yeah, I'm done with this day." It blew his mind. I'm like, I've done all that I could do here. And like you were talking about, nothing that we are going to discuss here is going to change over the next 12 hours. And guess what? I've said this to someone. It is unfortunately true. There is the reward for good work is more work. It is not the end of work.
Yeah.
No one says that was a great job, now you're done. It's just more work. And in fact, the great workers tend to get more of that work, because they are great workers. So, yeah, I definitely encourage to the degree that it's possible to establish those boundaries. And I would say this, if you cannot establish those boundaries now, or they do not exist, where you're like, oh, what are these guys talking about? I'm going to work. I love it. Is enjoy them while you can. Like, I actually wish there was more years before I got into management where I was like, oh, I'm going to leave at a 39.9. I remember when I first started out, I had a boss and his mindset was, and we've talked about this before, it doesn't happen as often now, and that's exactly the point. He'd come into my office. He was my boss. And he'd be like, do you have anything to do right now? I'm like, nah, it's a little slow. He's like, why are you here?
Be like, I don't know.
Yeah, I used to think it was a trick. I'm like, I'll find something to do, sir. He's like, no, go home. But what he was saying is, when it's slow, go home. Get out of here. But when it's busy, don't go anywhere. Like, so there would be weeks where I'd work 60, 70, 80. But those weeks when there was, well, probably 30 hours of work, there's not 20, but when there was 30 hours of work, he's like, take advantage of those weeks. And I didn't realize, now reflecting back, he was probably my age. So I'm 22. I'm right out of school. He's probably 35, 37. He wasn't an old guy. Well, maybe he was now that I am. But he was just like, yo, like I didn't realize he was trying to teach me what I was not wise enough to learn at that time. Is that there is more to life than this job, this work. And even though I hired you to do it, this is actually also the same individual that introduced me to happy hour. So shout out and kudos to him. I didn't know what happy hour was. He was like, hey, well, again, we were done with the project early and he actually wanted to celebrate. And he's like, you want to go to happy hour? I'm like, isn't every hour happy? Is that just the end of work? He's like, you don't know what happy hour is. And so he took me to happy hour. He's the first one to show me. And what should have been foreshadowing was all the candle extinguished eyes that I saw at the beginning of happy hour.
Candles.
Where people are like, you know, they're coming in all slumped shoulders, you know, and they're mid-career. And I'm like, hey, man, why are these people, you know, a few hours later, they're happy. But I'm like, God, that should have been more eye-opening than it was for me at the time.
Yeah, I know that struggle. I haven't been to a happy hour in a long. And so now I'm at the point where like happy hour feels like a burden, where it's like, it's like, I just want to go home. Like, you coming out for drinks? Like, no, like I just worked with you all day. I don't feel like talking anymore. And I used to feel bad about that. Like, you know, and even when I first got into management and things would happen, I mean, those things that people didn't exclude me from being a manager, I would still be like, oh, like, I mean, I like you. I like working with you. But like, you know what? Fine, I'll go. Where now, like, if I don't want to go, I just don't go. I figure it's better for me to go home and relax and recharge versus like go out, continue to burn the battery down, or have more drinks just to be able to keep up, only to get home and feel like crap and probably for days afterwards, which has happened before. So I'm just like, yo, like I don't have to stay. Like, I've done my job. I've been cordial. I've asked people about their days, their lives. I've shown genuine concern. I'm taking my ass home and I'm okay with that.
I like how you said this like it was a checklist. You're like, all right, I came into the office. I said hello to Bob. I gave a greeting in the break room. God, you're like, yeah. But that being said, I do understand what you're saying. Now, I don't not understand what you're saying about happy hour, because I'm still a fan of the happiest of hours because I'm a whiskey man. But what I have noticed, and this is a function of management, and I distinctly remember when the tide changed. I got promoted. So for some reason, this goes back to the culture of your organization. For some reason, Colorado is like the healthiest state in all of the nation. Yet I did more drinking with my coworkers there than I have done in totality all of the years in Texas. So that is just fascinating to me. So I don't know why Denver's so healthy, but their smoking and drinking is actually at the top of the list too. So I guess it's all the outdoor activity. I bring that up because for those who watch Seinfeld, it was like Seinfeld with the cake episode. So we went to happy hour like for any excuse, like somebody showed up early, happy hour. Somebody showed up late, happy hour. It's a birthday, happy hour. You're leaving, happy hour. You're starting, happy hour. Like there was any excuse. And maybe I just work with a bunch of alcoholics. Any excuse to go enjoy the beverages we did. But I remember when I promoted, I distinctly remember staff having a conversation next to me. We were in cubicles. It's not like I could not see them. Their heads were literally bobbing over the cubicle next to me, and they were planning happy hour without me. Like now, I had to sit at the manager's table. I had to go to manager's happy hour. I was no longer allowed to staff happy hour.
Yo, manager's happy hour just seems...
Yo, single tier, bro.
It's different, man. Like the types of conversations are different. I feel like when I've gone to happy hours or been at post-work events with people who are managers, the conversations still require me to exercise cognitive ability that I've left at the office. It's like, so what do you think of that thing that got rolled out? And it's like, can we talk about that tomorrow, man? Like, I don't feel like going through the list and talking about that email. Yo, I just want to have this drink. I want to talk about something not related to work, and I want to go home. Whereas I feel like when I wasn't a manager and I went to happy hour, the conversations were just different. There was like more jokes. You know, there wasn't, you know, what do you think of this? And there may have been questions like that that came up, but it didn't feel like I was still in a strategic conversation that just happened to involve alcohol. So that's like a very distinct difference. I'm looking through the list here and I'm like, huh, which one do I want to go to? So I'll jump to one that's money related, because I'm sure we'll both have thoughts on this one. So increasing my 401k contribution percentage. So in the past, I've gotten pay increases and did nothing with it other than spend that extra money, hence lifestyle inflation. But this year, with a merit increase happening, I'm making sure that I also increase my 401k contribution percentage at the same time. And, you know, I'll say, as someone who's about to age into the next demographic bucket, and by that I mean, when they do surveys, it'll be like 18 to 34, then like 35 plus. Bro, we're like...
Hey, we're 35 plus.
Yeah. And so I'm starting to get like a little anxious, and it's like, you know, do I have enough saved? Do I have the right habits as far as retirement? It's like, yes, I'm contributing. But going back to what we were talking about earlier, I'm like, yo, I got a little bit more so I can do a little bit more to make this less stressful down the road where I'm one of the people who's scrambling to play catch up. And if you're listening, you're scrambling to play catch up, that's okay. It happens. But what I can do to minimize that amount of scramble, I'm going to try to do this year by increasing that percentage.
Yeah, same. I'm going to try to raise my 401k. Actually, my goal, and it's a stretch goal. So I say a stretch goal is difficult, but not impossible. Similar to a SMART goal, as we talked about before. You know that acronym. I always forget. I'll give you some time to come up with it.
Specific, measurable, actionable, realistic, or reasonable, depending which one you look at, and timely.
Yeah. So for me, I'd call this a stretch goal. It's not, you know, it's not doable. It's one of those things that if I accomplish it, it would be great. It won't be make or break, but it will make my life, I would say my future life, better. And I'd like to max out my 401k contribution. So I think for 2018, the amount is $18,000 if it remains unchanged. And I'm at a point where I think pre-tax that is doable. And so some people are going to be like, you know, that's insane. I'm just starting out, you know, and as we've talked about thematic through the show, you know, we're in this. We are neck deep. We are 10 years served. So this did not happen overnight, but I think I'm in a position where I can make that happen. And don't get me wrong. It would be uncomfortable, but not impossible. And Financial Samurai, once again, I hate to keep name dropping, but he distinctly said this to us when we were over here talking about, yeah, we're going to retire at 67. We're making these contributions. Yeah, we're so proud of ourselves. So he's like, you should be uncomfortable. And I think we laughed uncomfortably.
We did.
When he said it.
At least I did.
But I'm seeing the wisdom now, because similar to the folks who are, if this relates to you, if you love your job and you want to do it for the next 40 years, great, change nothing. You know, continue to do what you're doing. But I think what a lot of us are saying is, well, I want to change job. I've got a side hustle. I want to do that full time. And yet we don't have a plan in place to transition on any scale sooner than 65 or 67, because we're all following this 67-year-old retirement plan.
Yeah.
And even going through this exercise, for some reason, that never clicked to me. I was like, yeah, I'm going to put 20% to the side. You know, yeah, I'm doing so good. Look at me, pat on the back. And then all that would do would mean I could retire at like 65. And that's cool. But if I, and I've talked about it before, where I'm looking at financial independence, and if possible, I'm now hesitant to use the term retire based on our conversation with the college investor. But that being said, work less and have financial independence. Mm-hmm. In my 40s, yo, I got to step my game up. Like, I can't follow the typical retirement plan if I want to retire early. They are not aligned. In fact, many of them are inverse relationship in that they would lead to the opposite of the goal that I claim that I have for myself. So in order to reach that, and it's just one, it would help me greatly. And that's another thing. I was crunching the math. I'll drop this in the show notes. But a calculator that I really like now is investor.gov, which is available through the federal government. And I don't know how I stumbled upon it. I think I found it like a money article. But their calculator, they have several. But the two that I like, they have a savings goal calculator and they have a retirement goal calculator. So the difference being the savings goal is like I want to reach 1 million. You add how much you have now, how much you plan to save, like is it over 40 years, is it over 30 years, and what percentage return that you expect to have. So some people may be, well, what percentage do I have? They've thought of that. So you can also do a variable return. You can say I usually use 3%. So if your goal is 7%, there's a variance you can use of 3%. So that means it might be as high as 10% some years, it might be as low as 4% some years. So it's a really great and simple tool, and it'll kick out the exact amount of money you need to save each month to retire whatever your goal is. So I really recommend you use that calculator, and that's the one I used. And I started crunching the numbers behind the scenes, and is it going to be easy? No. Do I know what the next 47 years look like? Also, no. But I do know that not doing anything different will lead to the exact same place that I am right now, and I'll just be 5 years further into the game or a decade and a half and no further closer to my retirement goal. So if I want to make a change, I need to be the person that, you know, like we talked about with Mint, I need to have a plan and then I need to follow it. Yeah. And so if folks want to take a look at those plans, I'm actually going to walk through that in an upcoming article, which will be available on our blog at paychecksandbalances.com.
Cool. So for timeliness sake, I'm going to hit one more and then you hit one more so you can pick from your list. And then maybe we'll do like a quick part two or something like that. We'll see. But related to what you just said, well, one word you said, a plan. For myself, it's establishing a 3 to 5 year plan. And so on a much earlier episode, I talked about how I don't set 3 to 5 year goals and I'm focused on the next 12 months, which has its benefits. And ultimately, I think once somebody has a bigger picture plan in place, that's much more reasonable. But I've reached the point where this, you know what, I'm not looking 3 to 5 years out. Like, it just doesn't work. It's just not working. And I found that even with creating a 12-month plan, and because I was going through this exercise again recently, and I was like, well, what's the bigger picture thing? And I have to define that. There could be things I want to accomplish over the course of the next year, but what am I working toward and what am I moving toward? And so I haven't figured it all out yet, but I'm working towards some longer-term goals. And I have one. You know, it's no secret that I want to get to a point where going to a day job feels like a choice, but also, what does that feed into? What is that going to allow me to do? What's going to be the emotional connection that's going to keep me motivated to hit that bigger picture goal? So it's kind of reneging on what I said before, you know, only looking at 12 months. At this point, I'm looking at what's the bigger thing 3 to 5 years out. And then what I'm going to try to do is work my way back without making it super detailed. And I think that's a mistake that I've made in the past with like the goal planning, is where I'm like, all right, I got to have every single thing mapped out. I got to know if I do 3 to 5 years, then what's the yearly, then what's the quarterly, then what's the monthly, then what's the weekly. And you don't have to have every single thing mapped out, but you should have a general idea of where you're going. And then in terms of how you break that down, you want to break it down in a way that works for you and in a way that doesn't stress you out, which I've done to myself a number of times. Like, bro, I feel like we have so many Google documents with like grandiose plans in there. And I look and I'm like, yeah, that makes my chest hurt. Like, I definitely feel like I just aged like 10 years from reading this document. And I'm like, yo, I don't need to have everything figured out, but I do need to know where I'm going longer term. So that's one thing I'm looking forward to establishing, is getting this bigger long-term vision in place.
So I think that's good. And I think that's also the importance of tailoring a plan versus these one size fits all advice that I think a lot of people try to force on folks out there, or they act like at least it's the end all be all, because mine's actually 90 days. So I operate, and here's why, I operate 90 day plans. So quarterly, every 3 months or so. And I actually have no idea what I'm going to do next year. And there's actually a quote that I want to share on that, but that's because that's what worked for me. Mm-hmm. And I say that because I have come to realize, and it's been through learned experience, that if I do right, which I can wrap my head around the next 90 days, and I do that each 90 days, the year takes care of itself. So if I do 90 days of positive habits, that's 3 months of positive habits. And then the next 3 months feed off the benefit of those. So January, February, March, because I've done well those 3 months, now April's easier. Mm-hmm. And if I do that all through 2018, December's easier for all the habits that I've done January through November. And then guess what? 2019 is easier. And I talked about, you know, the vision board I put together this year, which is broken down in that manner. It's manageable. Like, and I keep saying that because it wasn't for a lot of years. They were just these, like you talked about, and we called it the graveyard off the show, this graveyard of ideas that and goals that I just never got to because there was too many there. Where now I used to start 100 things and accomplish 10. Now I'm trying to start 10 things and accomplish 8. Because I feel like that's a much more reasonable plan. The quote that I want to share, I've actually, you know, I've been binging some, based on a recommendation, Comedians in Cars, which is actually a fascinating show. I'm also a Seinfeld fan, if that wasn't clear from the several mentions that I've had. But one quote that Seinfeld had on there, which is watching this show, actually watching all these older comedians now, like Seinfeld and Letterman, like how they are off the shows is hilarious. Like, because they're completely different people. I mean, they're basically, they're normal now. So they're, mm-hmm. I feel like they were on when they were on stage. And so the insights they have are just funny. Jerry Seinfeld is 61 at this time. I don't even know how old Letterman is, but he has a show as well.
Like 84.
Yeah. And he had a show with Trevor Noah, and he was talking to Noah, and he basically gives these comedians insight. They have it's Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee for the folks that want to check it out. And they have conversations over coffee. I mean, just regular conversations. They don't even talk about like comedy. And one of the quotes that he had that really stuck with me was, "You'll learn what you need to know when you need it." And so basically the experience is what teaches you, not planning for it, because you can't plan for what you haven't experienced, or it's more difficult. And then he said within this same conversation, pain is information rushing in. And the example that he used is when you first stubbed your toe, the pain that you felt was now more information that you had, that this is bad and this is something I need to avoid going forward. And thus you don't repeat that activity. But you didn't know that until the first time that happened. And, you know, there's all kinds of little tidbits and things like that that come in. And as folks know, I'm reading these 15 personal finance books. It's looking like I'm not going to get to the career books because it's actually related to what we're talking about here. I wanted to read the career books on my alleged 15-minute breaks that I'm allegedly supposed to get at work that never happened. And so I just basically don't read books at work. So I'm trying to figure out if I can read you on my lunch break or something like that. I don't really get lunch breaks. I have what we call quote unquote working lunch in the business world.
Someone will come talk to you anyway, even if you are trying to read. Like they will see yeah. you reading and be like, "Hey, you got a minute?" And it's like, "I got a book that I'm trying to finish.
If I shut my door, I'm rude." So, you know, all these office politics. So I don't know how I'm going to work my way through the career list, but they're still out there. If you want to see which books I'm reading, it's paycheckandbalances.com/books. But that being said, it really has changed. It slowed my approach and mindset because I used to read a lot. I never stopped, but I stopped reading books. I just like read online. I'd read articles and read information, more like snippets. And the exercise of sitting down and reading a book itself slows my mind down and forces me to process it in a different way than I otherwise would. And because I'm so old school, I actually still like to get books. I like to highlight. I like to go back. I like to reflect. That being said, I do like my Kindle reader because I can highlight. It's a lot easier to find than dogging pages and trying to remember what the heck that quote was I read back in the day.
Yeah.
So I guess all that to kind of bring home is, you know, we're sharing these goals and plans with you, but take the piece of the advice that will work for you. It's not that we know everything and we're suddenly wise because we're 10 years in. But if the 12-month plan works for you, great. If the 3 to 5 year yeah. plan works for you, great. You know what? If a 24-hour plan is better tailored to you, you know, use my favorite quote is the best plan is the plan that works.
Yeah.
Instead yeah. of trying to fail, figure out this best practice.
Yeah, I'm 100% with that. And so even like the 3 to 5 year thing, I'm not going to spend like weeks outlining. I remember I had a manager before. This was probably my first job out of school. And he had like it was like a life plan. And yo, it looked like a novel. And I'm like, how long did you spend creating this tome, man? And he was that type of person. And he was just like very by the book in the most literal cliche sense possible. And he lived by that thing. And of course, when I look him up on LinkedIn, it looks like he's right on schedule from what I remember. I'm like, yo, I'm like, all right, man. If that works for you, but you know, so I'll have this bigger long-term goal, but I'll probably ultimately still work my way back to kind of more of a 12-week cycle, so something that's more quarterly. And there'll be stuff that I don't have completely filled in between. In fact, there'll be a lot of stuff. I probably won't do more than like a couple pages in like a Google Doc or something like that. But yeah, you know, I'll have a long-term goal in mind, and then that'll be the North Star essentially. And then, you know, I may have 12-week cycles that I work through specific things to make sure I get some of the smaller tasks done, and I'll hold myself to that, and I'll just keep making my way through, just knowing that there's something bigger down the road that I'm working towards. So yes, do whatever works best for you. Most importantly, get started. So we're going to close it out with one from your list.
Yeah. And I would say this though, as it relates to, because I don't want to let people off the hook. A goal without a plan is a dream. So if you heard that and you say, well, my plan is going to be the no plan plan. That's not what I'm saying. So whether it's 24 hours, 3-5 years, or I guess 24-year plan, that's better than nothing. And I'm going to equate nothing with it just exists in your head. Like, oh, I've got these general goals and things that I want to do for 2018. And then they'll just happen through fruition and will. And no, they will not. They will not. Until you or the appropriate parties, whether it's networking or mentorship, which is another thing that I'm really big on, and I'm actually shopping around for now. I've started, actually, that's my last one. So my last one is to help others. So I'll revisit the quote that was told to me: use your 20s to learn, your 30s to apply, and your 40s to teach and or pay it forward. So I'm looking this year, within reason, not to be, you know, still have to have that work-life balance. So within those 40 hours of dedicated work, 20 hours dedicated to the podcast, finding and identifying, make it a priority of time to help others financially or otherwise. And so how for me is right now, I've actually started already another mentorship program where I'll be a mentor to someone. I'll keep it vague because I don't know if I don't like to share other people's information, but also looking for other opportunities for to volunteer through 2018 and beyond, because I don't know about you. Sometimes it is still surreal to me. I was having this conversation the other day. I don't know if I'll ever get comfortable with this. This has been since I was writing a blog. Mm-hmm. And it's actually one of the reasons why I started a blog way back in the day, like 2003 or whatever the case may be, because folks were like, you know, that's a voice or a message that needs to be shared. And, you know, we've also heard that, you know, representation matters. And even if you don't realize the influence you're having, people seeing someone sharing their voice or sharing their story that looks like them, that sounds like them, or even is just the same age as them, is something that I wouldn't say a responsibility, but it's something that you need to take on as a recommendation I have. But it is still insane to me that anyone listens to me. Anyone listening to this sentence that I'm saying right now
is for so long. You will just never accept it.
I never will. I never will. Now, mind you, if people ask my opinion on the subject, I'm happy to give it. You know, I use whatever clause or disclaimer I need to. But it's just, I don't think people realize that. Now, I will say this. That's not unique. I thought it was. I thought, like, for example, the easiest representative might be a famous person. I thought famous people knew, for some reason, I just thought famous people know they're famous. They're like, yeah, I am a famous person. You are talking, you are engaging with a famous person right now. But when they're all, you know, not all of them, not all the Kanye's and things like that, but the normal, not to say Kanye, no, you know, the triggering word, but the folks who have the ability to think outside of themselves more often than Kanye, when I see them engaged, they're just like, I'm me and y'all think I'm famous. I just see myself as me. I'm just living my life. Mm. You know? And that's strange to me to observe. And then I have to realize that these people were just regular average Joes, you know, shout out to Average Joe, until they were famous. So, of course, they're going to see themselves as, I'm just living my life. I happen to do or have a platform or a venue in which people listen to me. And so I guess I'm saying, I don't know that I'll ever accept that. I'm happy to give my opinion on whatever question folks may have. I actually like researching and looking to information. That's something that brings me enjoyment, which is why I would like to do this full time. But I'm going to try to more proactively identify opportunities to, if nothing else, what I am comfortable with is sharing my story.
Yeah. And this also came up earlier today, but it was just this idea of just like even just being comfortable with oneself and just saying what's on your mind. Now, this is something that older people are very skilled at, just putting whatever out there. And there are times I still hesitate. There are times where, and someone said this on the Facebook page, where it was in response to the episode with Jen Hemphill, and they said that they really struggle with celebrating the wins, like it makes them really uncomfortable. And I've felt that myself. It's like we have a podcast that's based on personal finance and career advice that's tied to our experience. And sometimes, like, when good things happen, I'm like, like, if I share this, like, someone is going to feel bad. And to this day, I still have to be like, you know what? There's also somebody who's benefiting from my story, and I want to focus more on that person. And I don't want to compromise myself or hide parts of who I am because it might make somebody feel bad, you know?
And I have an article that I'll get in the show notes that says you should not, because there was a study from Time Magazine that said humble bragging is less liked than outward bragging. So humble bragging actually makes you look less sincere. So, yo, you know, drop that selfie, put that hashtag up, hashtag winning, hashtag doing it big, hashtag haters gonna hate, you know, look at me now, glow up. You know, like, for some reason, that's actually more acceptable than the humble brag. Like, man, I can't believe I'm out here being rich and stunting on these boys. It's crazy where I came from. You know, like, that's actually less well received. Yeah. So I'll get that in the show notes and the newsletter, that humble bragging is actually more, excuse me, humble bragging, found the article, makes people dislike you according to science.
Yeah, I could see that. And it's like when someone's like, man, yo, the problem, like the things that I got to deal with as a millionaire, man, like, it's just crazy. It's like, yo, shut the...
More money, more problems.
It's like, I'm really not trying to hear that. So, yeah, we'll wrap up there for this episode. There are a few that we didn't get to, and this is probably one of the longer episodes that we've had in a while, man. But that's okay, you know, because there's a lot of insight, some jokes, the things that make the show the show.
2018, new year, new us.
So if you enjoyed today's episode or found it useful, be sure to share and hit us with those 5 stars in Apple Podcasts. If you don't know how, you can go to paychecksandbalances.com/review. And as we always say, the more people we reach, the more people we help. So do tell a friend, share it across your social platforms. Let people know that the show exists.
So funny side note here, I almost had a panic attack because my old eyes, which I also need to go to the optometrist for preventative care to get these eyes checked.
I just got new glasses, by the way.
Yeah, I wasn't able to read this review, so I had to enlarge it. What am I at right now? Like 140? I'm at 125% right now. I was like, I can't read it. This week's 5-star review comes from Ray Noel. Yo, I think I could, actually, I think I pronounced that correct. She's going to write it and say I pronounced it incorrectly.
Or he.
True. 5 stars, the absolute best. I love this podcast! !! All caps. I'm 27 and discovered this gym last year, GEM, folks, when I had some major changes going on in my life. Moved to a new area, got married, congratulations, and began my first big girl salary job. Hey, so it is a girl, man.
Yep, it is a woman. It is.
As I work towards establishing myself within my career and bossing up as a wife and adult woman, this podcast has provided me the insight that I am able to use in every aspect of my life. Rich and Marcus are like those two older... You know, what's funny here is she says Marcus and Rich, but I'm so used to saying your name first.
It's all good, man. Don't let it trip you up.
Here we are. Marcus and Rich are like those two older cousins who share their own uncensored life lessons, along with providing the plug to their successful friend and their secrets to help you recognize and minimize those inevitable F-ups in adult life. Thanks, P&B, for being great, relatable, relevant, entertaining, all while keeping it real. Thank you, Rich.
Appreciate that. That's what's up.
2018 on the right foot.
Yeah, there we go, you know. Starting strong. So encourage folks to leave their 5-star review so you have a chance for yours to be read on the show. But yeah, until next time, thanks to everyone for listening. Be safe. We out. Peace.